You're listening to Well Met, a Hearthstone podcast brought to you by BlizzPro.com.
Well Met.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to episode number 37 of Well Met. 37 whole episodes, and we've got an incredible one for you coming up tonight. I'm John Horstman. I push the buttons every week, and of course, I've got the crew with me. First, all the way from Saskatoon, Canada, it is Kevin Hovdestad. Hey, Kev.
How's it going, John? Looks like it's going to be a big week. We got a lot of stuff to talk about. I am actually super excited for this week's show because we get to talk about a bunch of tournament stuff, and we both know I love doing that.
Absolutely. You and I both. And also, his least favorite thing, apparently, to talk. Well, I guess not really least favorite thing, but it is all the way from Kansas City, J.R. Cook. Hey, J.R.
Hey, John. So, chat room wants to ask Kevin, requesting Kevin to do a Sir Finlay Murgleton in a female voice.
Do it.
Things that aren't going to happen for 200,
tell
Mr.
What,
Trebek.
I've at least got this for you, chat.
Remarkable.
I can't do it.
So, there you go. Maybe next
that
time.
That was Kevin.
Wow.
Live. He did like this whole like voice acting thing. With the mime, whatever. Ventriloquism. That's the word I'm looking for.
My career as a voice actor is going to be horrendously short-lived, you guys. Horrendously.
Not as long as you keep giving me sound bites, sir. JR, how you doing this week, man? Tell us about your week.
Oh, man, this week was pretty busy, pretty crazy, especially the end of the week. As you guys know, I did that 24-hour gaming marathon. Did that on the night of Thanksgiving. I was up at like 7 a.m. that morning. New Thanksgiving stuff with the wife. Was up that whole day. Started at 7 p.m., so I was already up for 12 hours when I started my 24-hour gaming marathon. Played that, was able to finish it out. You guys helped me raise $600 for the Children's Miracle Network.
That's huge, dude. Freaking huge applause for JR. 24 hours straight, $600. I know I interrupted you with the really long applause thing. I'm sorry. Keep going.
No, so I was up for 36 hours at that point, but we raised $600, which is awesome. There's still time to donate if you guys want to. I'm going to have it open until, I believe, the end of December. I might be doing some mini gaming streams or something like that to help raise. Because I would like to raise at least $1,000 because that is what I raised last year. So if you want to donate, you can go to extralife.blizzpro.com. Click the support me button. Donate there. For every $5 that you donate, you'll get entered into a raffle to win a SteelSeries V3 Prism gaming headset, which is about around $100 value. So I'll be giving that away towards the end of December. If we hit $2,000, you'll also be entered into a raffle for a Nintendo 3DS XL color of your choice. I'm doubting we hit that, but if we do, that'd be awesome.
Don't doubt. Have faith. You'll make it. I believe it.
That's really cool, dude.
But if we can hit $1,000, that'd be great.
So awesome.
Thank you.
How about your week in Hearthstone, JR? How did that go?
I didn't have a lot of chance to play on the ladder, mainly because the Tavern Brawl this week was really, really good.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it like a lot. Like I started playing like the very first day it loaded up. I decided I had a bunch of priest quests, so I decided to go ahead and do them. I just made a standard basically dragon priest, and that's when I found out like all the 9 drops that I had. Guaranteeing that you get Tree of Life. So at first that was fun because I just sit there and keep healing up and healing up. And then I got to thinking, I'm like, well, this could actually work with Soul Priest and Kevin's favorite card, Balf Ram Shield.
Yes.
And be an instant kill. And I was going to brag about finding that out until I found out that Reddit found out about it a few days ago as well.
Yeah, so this guy is
now
toast.
It looks like I just copied them. But that wasn't the case. I found out like the first or second day, guys.
This guy's Toast had a really cool video of him doing it. And then there was one where he misclicked and like, cause he threw his cards out too fast and like threw a, like, a, I think it was like an Acolyte of Pain out there and then Tree of Life and killed himself and his opponent. It was awesome.
Yeah.
So that's awesome, man. Well, Kev, how about you? How was your week in Hearthstone?
It was okay. I mean, I honestly, with the amount of work I've had to do since I got back from BlizzCon and just how much time I lost at the start of the month being at BlizzCon, I haven't really struggled to play a ton. I got some friends who are getting into the game, so I find myself talking with them a lot, watching them play, helping people build decks, trying to get people more involved in the game because it is a super fun casual game and one of the only games that most of my friends are like, you know what? Yeah, I have a tablet. I could pick this up and play it when I don't have time to play other things. And so it's been a lot of fun getting people into it and talking them through like all the cool different decks they could choose to play. But for myself, I've maybe only played a handful of games just to finish out my quests. And I've been trying to learn some new decks for myself. I played a lot of Control Priest, went back and played some Oil Rogue, just stuff that I really haven't had a chance to put a lot of time in on. Because like I have Gold, Warrior, Hunter and Druid now, and I hit Legend with Paladin and Druid. Like those are the classes I've put time into, so I want to learn the other ones to that level if I can as well. That's been my priority.
Nice. That sounds like fun. Is there any deck in particular you've been enjoying the most?
I actually really like Control Priest. It's tough to play it well, and it's unfortunately a deck that I think needs like one or two more really good cards to be able to play it at a like high level. But if you do get the cards out that you need in the early game, if you can get Zombie Chows and Pyromancers and Soul Priests and Blade Masters and stuff, you can do a lot of damage. My record is actually a turn 4 OTK playing as Control Priest against a Handlock.
How did you work that?
I coined out a Holy Champion on 3, and then I was able to put down I had a Pyromancer down. I played Light of the Nauru, which caused all of the minions on the board to get hit with the AoE from the Pyromancer, played Circle of Healing, everybody healed up, did it again, healed one of my minions, and I had lethal on the Holy Champion plus the other minions on the board.
What?
It's gross. When it works, it's truly disgusting.
That's amazing.
So it's a lot of fun, and it counters a lot of stuff on ladder, like Pyromancer and any spell clears up all the Paladin tokens, you can take board control really easily with like Cabal Shadow Priest. It's just a fun deck to play.
Nice. As for me, I'm trying something new. Kevin and Jer, you guys know me, so you know I like to only play games when I'm like comfortable and can get in the zone. And I'm taking Wayne Gretzky's advice for this one. So Kevin, Canada, you'll appreciate this. He always said you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. In this case, with Hearthstone, you lose 100% of the games you don't play. And so I'm just starting to, whenever I have a spare moment, I'm busting out my iPhone, playing a game, playing two. I'm running Aggro Shaman right now, a Luffy's deck, which is really fun, but I'm starting to hit like the control wall at rank 9. Haven't played a whole lot. And then I switched over to Midrange Hunter, and I'm having some really good luck with that. It tends to be fast enough to kind of beat out those control decks. So it's been a lot of fun. Been playing a little bit with Freshka a little bit. I've been watching him pilot some insane decks that I hope he publishes, because there's some really good decks that he and his practice group are doing that could really shake things up, and they're doing really well with it, like really high legend play. So yeah, that was my week. Anything else we need to touch on?
Yeah, on the ladder, I've been playing a little bit. I've still been playing Aggro Druid a little bit. I did replace my Shade of Naxxramas with the new Mounted Raptor, and nice. That card, in my opinion, is really good in Aggro Druid. I don't know how well it does with mid-range Druid if you play Shade of Naxxramas, but if you play Shade, you might consider switching it over. In mid-range, you might want to keep the Shade. I don't know. But in Aggro Druid, I do recommend switching out to the Mounted Raptor. It's really good in that deck.
Nice. Let's jump into the news.
This Week in Hearthstone, Heroes of Warcraft.
All right, well, we had a pretty exciting week this week in Hearthstone. Not a lot of news, but big news. But before we jump into that, we actually had our first major tournament of the year with DreamHack Winter. So DreamHack Winter was a 200-player, 9-round Swiss, followed by single elimination top 16. before we go any further, JR, I know you are a big proponent of Swiss. I know, Kev, you are too. We kind of all are. We all are fans of Swiss. How do you guys feel about seeing DreamHack adopting 9-round Swiss tournament and a 200-person tournament to start off 2016 Hearthstone?
Personally, I have not paid attention to DreamHack, so this is the first time hearing about this, and the fact that a major tournament was able to do a Swiss format makes me hope that others will take suit, because in my opinion, it is the superior format for a game like this. So that excites me quite a bit, and I hope we see more.
Yeah, I mean, DreamHack has a history of being one of the only good, well-produced esports events that is actually long enough to be able to pull this off. Unfortunately, a lot of the tournaments that are run other than DreamHack have a tendency to not want to do matches that aren't streamed. They don't want any of the pro players not to be visible to the online crowd. So DreamHack just says, no, it doesn't matter. Like, we're more concerned with, we'll get as many of those games broadcast in as many ways as possible, which is why they use a lot of community streamers for some of the other titles that they have at the event. But they actually basically say, no, like, we're just going to play it out that way. We'll make sure that the whole of the playoff bracket is streamed. But if somebody misses Reynad's first game against some player no one's ever heard of, like, too bad, doesn't matter. Which is awesome, because it means that they are able to go through the sort of larger component of that tournament. And it's one of the only, I think, at this point, events that could really pull that off. So I was really excited to see them do it. 9 rounds is probably enough given that size of player pool. It'd be cool to see them go even bigger, but I think you'd get to a point where you'd have to play out some of those rounds, maybe like off site, or have like two sets of Swiss, one that's played online, and then the people who advance to DreamHack itself could play the rest of them on site or something. But I was really happy with how it played out.
Yeah, I know in like Magic the Gathering, whenever they, because that's their standard at Swiss, in tournaments like this, when they would stream that in any of the like Star City games or stuff like that, they would just have a feature table that would get streamed for that round, and then they might be able to switch over to other players. Maybe DreamHack, I don't know how DreamHack did it, but maybe if in DreamHack or any future stream decides to do this, maybe they can do 2 or 3 different streams and have different players play at the same time. And then you can go back and forth and see who you want. The problem with that is they probably want everybody in just one channel. But I don't see a problem with doing 2 or 3, in my opinion. But I think it's cool. I really hope to see this take hold in the future. But we'll have to see. As you said, sponsors are probably the big deal behind it and wanting to stream those high-end players.
I think it's also a sign, though, of the Hearthstone scene maturing a little bit, because when you look at that 200 player list, most of them are fairly recognizable. It means that we're getting that big player pool finally. It also means that Hearthstone has kind of established itself, so you don't really need to, you know, kind of vampire off of some of those really, you know, those 5, 6, 7, 10 big names. There's a lot of great names and a lot of great Hearthstone players playing. And it also hopefully means that we're going to have more competition, you know, going forward in, you know, who's in those top 10 slots and things like that.
This means my pro career will finally take off.
There you go.
Well, it's nice too, because there are a lot of other game scenes, right? Like, Hearthstone, I think, with the way they're running these events, really wants to open it up to that bigger player pool, like you're saying, John, but they're doing it in a way that's very different from, for example, like the fighting game community, where anybody can show up and play, but it's elimination from round one all the way through at every event. And in Hearthstone, I think we can all just agree that the odds of you losing a game to some statistical anomaly are just high enough that that would be really awful, and the level of pro play wouldn't shine through.
Absolutely. I agree. Let's keep going down the list here about DreamHack. So this was actually pretty cool. It was a Last Hero Standing tournament, best of 5. So it was a great tournament, and even people in chat are saying it was great to watch and stuff like that. And it's Last Hero Standing. So we're seeing that make a little bit of a comeback among some, you know, recent tournaments and stuff like that. And I think that's really cool. I like the variation in formats. It kind of makes the game exciting, and it brings in some new strategies and things that we're not really used to seeing in Hearthstone. And the cool thing is that with Blizzard, that's okay. We're going to go more into why it's okay in a little bit, but it's okay to be last hero standing and still award world championship points and all that jazz. Let's go ahead and jump into the next one. So this was for $40,000 in championship tour points in first place. Actually, let's go the other way around. In third and fourth place, we had Green Sheep from Dignitas and Hoi from Na'Vi. In second, we had Ersi, and he's from Manalite. And did I get that right?
Yep.
Yeah, I did. Okay, then perfect. Thank you. Sorry. And then Purple was first from Gamers Origin. So they're taking away some big cash bonuses there. And even more interestingly, and we're going to explain this in a second, Purple takes home 15 BlizzCon points. Ersi takes 10, and Hoi and Green Sheep take 5. So Kevin asked me, John, what do these points mean?
John, what do these points mean?
Kevin, hold on. We're going to get to it. Okay. Jeez.
All right. Gosh. I'm in a hurry to get things done.
Kevin, you're the worst.
I'm going to rush and rush until this is no fun.
So the exciting news is that Blizzard this last week did come out with their new 2016 World Championship rules and formats and stuff like that. We're going to try a little something new for the video show. So hopefully this works. And it did. Great. We're going to pull up a browser here. We're still going to talk through everything. So you guys on audio are going to be in great shape. But on video, you're also going to get to see the webpage. And we're just going to kind of run through the different things here. So, Kev, can I have you actually start us off just really quick about kind of the high level overview of some of the major changes going on? Is that all right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, for those of you who watched how the Hearthstone World Championships worked last year, you have a rough idea of how this is going to work. We're going to have four players each advancing from four regions that they've identified: the Americas, Europe, China, and Asia Pacific. Each region is going to run through a series of qualifying tournaments, last call opportunities, all that sort of stuff. However, in this year, they're going to do something a little more akin, actually, to how the StarCraft World Championship Series worked back in 2013, and they're going to do seasonal championships. So there's actually going to be a string of seasons throughout the year, a winter season, a spring season, a summer season, all of which are going to be used to determine winners in the sort of each individual window of time, which is actually really cool because it gives an opportunity for somebody who's really strong in a particular meta to kind of break through. There will be no buys in any major Hearthstone event. So players can be invited still. Tournament organizers can extend invitations to top players for whatever reasons, but they have to start in the same round as any open bracket or qualified player. So you don't see any of this stuff where in tournaments like DreamHack last year, for example, you might have had people like Trump who would be invited to the tournament and not have to play through the Swiss rounds. They'd just be guaranteed to go to the next stage of the event. The prize pool is way up. So the total Hearthstone World Championship prize pool this year is going to be over $1 million with $100,000 prize pool for each of the 9 seasonal championships in each region. So there's a lot of money getting passed around here. There'll be more on-site events, more fireside gathering opportunities, more points that are going to decay, and better last call qualifying point situations, so you can collect even more points that way. Distribution has been rebalanced. Every legend player can score points. And the big one, and the one that we're going to probably spend the most time on, every tournament can use a different format. They're going to allow tournament organizers this year to use different match formats, tournament formats, just to sort of allow them to be creative, which means events that last year couldn't contribute to the Hearthstone World Championship but were a lot of fun to watch this year could be eligible qualifying events.
Cool.
Did I miss anything important?
I think you missed the, or I think you got the big what's new here. So that's the high level overview of what's going on. We're going to break it down now, kind of step by step as we go through. So the first thing that I think is really cool to talk about is the new format. So you still have your monthly seasons and things like that, but there are actually 3 larger seasons. They have a winter season, a spring season, and a summer season. How it essentially works is at the end of the season, you're going to have a preliminary and a championship now to go in to, well, to get your invite to the BlizzCon World Championships. So it's really interesting how they've changed the point structure on this. The point structure is what will kind of less, but also what it used to be 100 points, right, for a major win or premier tournament win, right? And then it was like 10 points for a it was 10 points for a season win, like first on ladder. So like it was really kind of misbalanced. And now the point structure is actually much, much different. So how it works now on the ladder, first place gets 15 points, which is the same amount of points as you get for winning a Hearthstone major, but half the amount of points that you get for winning a season championship. What do you guys think about the new kind of point allocation and how they've changed the competitive side to where people in, honestly, in second through eighth, especially, get rewarded much more than they used to in the past?
Yeah, this is big. Like when you look at how the point allocations worked last year, ranked play would have been 50 points to first place, 40 points for second to 10th, 30 points for 11 to 20th. Those are huge gaps and they're tough to overcome. Like somebody would have had to win basically a playoff bracket spot in a major tournament and it wouldn't even make up the difference. Like a playoff performance in a $10,000 tournament would not overcome the difference between being in 10th and 11th on the ladder in a season, which was crazy. All of a sudden now you've got 15 points, 12 points and 10 points respectively for those same allocations, which means the second through 10th place player on a ladder season can make up that gap with one quick little Hearthstone cup. Or if they make it to top eight in a small tournament, they actually close the gap. Third or fourth place, they pull ahead. Like, and those are not how those things worked before, because the gap used to be so big. Minor tournaments, winners used to get 50 points, but by the time you were in third place, you only got 10 points. 10 points wasn't enough to bring you back from the difference between being in 20th and 21st place on the ladder in one season. So it, like, this is really big. It basically means that anyone who plays at a competitive level is going to finish close. They're going to have a chance to be within striking distance. Like any one good tournament finish can make the difference for any player at any time.
So my question is, and I think this is probably covered in here, but the wording is a little weird. At the end of each season, do the points reset? So everybody at every season starts again? Or do they just accumulate over the entire year?
This is a really weird one. So they call it a point decay system. So they don't say that they're totally gone, but it kind of seems to be that they are, but I don't know.
Right. That's why I was saying the wording was weird, because it's not very clear on what happens at the end of the season. And I would like to see Blizzard put some clarification around that.
I personally think that, and again, I have no confirmation, but if I was to speculate, because I actually sent out a couple tweets this last week trying to get clarification on it, if I were going to guess, I think it just means that somebody who does really well in one season, their points start to go away so that they can't just sit on their, you know, kind of season points and be like, oh, cool, well, I'm in or whatever. They actually have to continue to play and continue to stay competitive in Hearthstone to do it. So I don't know if it totally resets, or maybe someone who gets 30 points the season before only gets, you know, whatever, like 5 or something the next season. At the same time, I don't know how you really balance that. So it's interesting, but I don't know. What do you think, Kev?
My theory is that they're going to do this very similar to how the StarCraft stuff worked, because they're following very similar format changes here. So my guess is what will happen is, let's say that at the end of, we'll use the winter season as an example. The winter season is looking to run for 3 months, December, January, February. So somebody could finish that with, let's say, maybe 30, 35 points from ranked play, and maybe they get one tournament in that time period or two tournaments. So they're up to maybe 50 points. And then they do well in the championship. They score another, we'll say 15. They finish with 65 for that season out of a possible like maximum of maybe, I guess, like 90. So they do really well. Probably what they're going to say is, okay, at the end of the season, we're going to reduce everybody's point total by 50. And you start with that much carryover going into the next season, which basically allows the champions, right, the people who won tournaments and finished the highest in a season, a little bit of legroom going into the next season that says you are the strongest players in the world right now. So we want to give you the benefit of the doubt, because what they used to do in StarCraft was have the top 8 players at the end of the season basically get a free pass into the Premier League, which was like the top 32 players. It'd be the equivalent of saying anybody who finishes in the playoff bracket in Hearthstone now is guaranteed to get to play in the next seasonal prelim or whatever. And they can't do that with their new rules because they don't want to guarantee anybody any kind of buys, right? So instead, they're saying, okay, you get to keep a small percentage of your points or a portion of your points at the end of each season to help you get a boost into the next season. And that's really cool because it does actually reward the people who do the best, and they probably aren't going to be a ton of repeat winners. We've seen that already. No one stays at the top for any length of time, but it does let them stay competitive and be involved and probably make a repeat appearance at least in a prelim or a championship, which is great. Like, I love that.
I think that makes the most sense. So yeah, let's keep on jumping down then. So that's how the points are breaking up. Let's talk a little bit about Fireside Gathering tournaments in the season preliminaries. So Fireside Gathering tournaments are basically just another way that you can kind of qualify to get into the season preliminaries. Basically, there's select Blizzard sanctioned Hearthstone tournaments that you're going to have at these Fireside Gathering events. And basically, season preliminaries. Oh my God, that was awful.
Just call them prelims, man. You can do this.
Season prelims. There you go, buddy. Are going to basically all be on site now. So they actually won't be an online thing. It's going to be an on site prelim among at least 100. Well, it's going to be 128, the top 128 point earners for their each respective region. So now we're going off of online into a, you know, kind of a live event, and they're just going to invite the top 128 point earners. What do you guys think about this? This is definitely a really cool way to kind of look at it, I guess I would say, where you now you're just taking, cool, over these 3 months, whoever has the most points, top 128, you have to go to you have to go to a local place and then compete there in the preliminaries. How does that feel?
I mean, is that really what it is? Is they're going to go to these Fireside Gatherings and compete there at these season preliminaries? Am I reading that right, or am I incorrect?
It says the season preliminaries will be played in multiple on-site Fireside Gathering locations at the same time in a double elimination tournament format. Players can attend any location that is most convenient, but each will be matched against their opponent based on seeding, regardless of where in the world the players are participating.
And those are the select Blizzard sanction. Yep. So this, now that you're reading this to me, and I took it as something different. Yeah. I took it as something different originally when I read this last week. Like, I seriously thought this was just sort of like what they had already done before, where they'd have Fireside Gatherings that if you win, you get to go to like a regional thing and win on, sort of like what our friend of the show, Captain Crunch, did, where he got into the Final Four, basically, and was able to compete. But this sounds way different. This sounds like they're going to bring these tournaments to these Fireside Gatherings and then let them figure out who the winners are to get these points. I think that's really cool.
I think it's freaking brilliant.
If that's like, how it works.
What I'm guessing they're planning here is basically they're going to have a main broadcast venue again, right? Whether that's their Burbank studio or they book the Folsom Foundry or any of those kind of places. They set up the main sort of event, but then the players can be at whatever location is convenient for them, which also means every one of those Fireside Gathering locations will be a hub for spectators. People can come out, they can watch these guys in real time playing the matches that are being broadcast online, And that's a huge draw, and also one of the best decentralization techniques I think we've ever seen for any kind of esport at all. Traditionally, like, you know, Intel Extreme Masters throws a big tournament and there's going to be League and Counter-Strike and StarCraft, but you have to get to San Jose or Katowice, Poland or whatever. Like, you got to be in that one place at that one stadium. This is like, you know what? The pro players are going to be in these 10 cities. If you're nearby, hit one of those places up. All of a sudden, almost everybody is within driving distance of a way to go and be hands-on with their favorite players or part of the experience of being there live by being at one of these little fireside gatherings, where all they got to do is just make sure that that can be rebroadcast through whatever the central studio location is, because they can do that all online. That's awesome.
I think the really interesting thing is going to see how many of these locations are going to host like preliminary things, even for North America, right? So I'd really curious if it's going to be like 10 and like my nearest one is Kansas City, or if
which
it's
you
like,
would go to because
you would fly Kansas me there City. So right. Yeah,
no,
totally.
Or if it's going to be like one for each state kind of thing or somewhere in between that. I think that's going to be really interesting to see, and I wonder if it's going to gate anybody's ability to be able to compete at a high level in Hearthstone.
I mean, I would imagine that they're probably going to go after fireside gatherings that have already been successful, you know, because they have a list of those in certain regions that have been big and successful, and probably other ones that are Blizzard's probably going to send specific people to. Like, I wouldn't be surprised at all to see our Kansas City one end up getting selected just because we've had a good relationship with Blizzard in the past and we've had really good turnouts. But I would assume that there's lots of others around the country that are like that, that Blizzard probably has no problem hooking up with stuff like this. At the same time, I bet there's going to be cities that may not have that kind of following that they're probably going to send a Blizzard representative to. They did something similar to this last year with had one at like a McDonald's down in Texas that was officially sanctioned and that Blizzard had sent some people to. It was sponsored by McDonald's, of all things.
My guess is that they'll just ramp it up, right? Like, they've been trying for a long time to grow the Fireside Gathering program. They're bringing on new staff to manage Fireside Gatherings. I would guess that they basically want there to be as many locations as possible. And if they can get 15 or 20 places to put together good events, you know, I mean, my guess would be you'll see one in every major center in the States, plus the places that already have a good, consistent following. And they're going to actively, like, even now, they actively encourage people to start new fireside gatherings. And if you can show them evidence that you've got a good venue that's set up for this, got your IPs whitelisted in advance, like, they're going to make it happen. I would love to see two or even three dozen simultaneous locations. And I don't think that's out of the question. I think that's what they want.
I think that sounds about right. I'd say that's where I'd probably peg it, between 20 and 30. For me. So, yeah. So after the season preliminaries, the top eight will go to the season championships. And this one is going to basically, Blizzard is going to cover the travel expenses for these guys to go to where there was. Yeah, I guess they don't even say yet, but they're going to go to probably at least an NA, probably like California or something like that. And they're going to head and basically compete in a dual bracket format. And the cool thing is already just for these season championships, $100,000 prize pool right then and there.
Each.
So each one. So before we even get to BlizzCon World Championship, just from Blizzard, straight up Blizzard season championships tournaments, $300,000. So that's already more than the World Championships last year. And we're going to get into the prize pool this year, so don't spoil it. But yeah, so the top two players from each group will advance to a four-player single elimination bracket until that region season's champion is crowned. And then the season champion is going to, that's when you win a season, that's an invite to BlizzCon. Did I read that correctly?
I think so.
I'm scrolling back.
I'm trying to find the line
it's
that you're referring
top one.
To.
Yep.
I mean, they don't actually say BlizzCon.
Yes,
that's
they do.
The one that's thing. True.
Oh, sorry.
No, yeah, they don't. That's the thing that's really interesting.
They haven't done that any year ever, even though, because there was the 1 year where they didn't have BlizzCon, but they had like world championships out in China.
Yeah.
And they don't mention BlizzCon just for the fact BlizzCon 2016 hasn't been announced yet.
Right.
But when BlizzCon 2016 gets announced, then we'll go, oh, yeah, this is at BlizzCon.
So how it works for Americas, Europe, and the Asia Pacific, it is basically if you get into basically the winner of each summer championship is invited to BlizzCon, or each season championship is invited to BlizzCon. And then the fourth place or the fourth position is from the last call invitational at the end. China is going to be run different, but I have not gotten in to see how that's going to be different. It just says go to the China Hearthstone website, and I can't read anything on that website, so I don't know how it really works. So I don't know how different it is or not, but for Americas, Europe, and Asia Pacific, that's how it's going to work. So basically win a season championship, and that's how you get to BlizzCon. That's really high stakes stuff. Do you think that's kind of too high stakes and too unforgiving of a format?
I personally think it's great because this falls into something that I believe we talked about a few weeks ago about the tournament scene and needing better storylines that are all year long. Because one of our complaints about the World Championship this last year was the fact that we didn't really know these players until like just a few weeks before BlizzCon. You know, some of the players we'd known because they were competing last week or last year. Some we knew because we saw them in tournaments, things like that. But some of them we didn't really know that well. I think this gives us a storyline that's going to be able to be followed the entire year. And we're going to learn who, and we're going to be able to follow who's leading the entire year and have more transparency in the tournament. And I think that's a huge, huge deal. And I think it's going to make this year way more exciting than we've seen in the past.
I mean, you run the risk, and I don't actually think this is a serious problem, but you run the risk that somebody punches their ticket to BlizzCon by winning the first season in NA and then just doesn't worry about the rest of the year. They stop attending tournaments, they stop playing the game actively because they're already guaranteed to show up at BlizzCon. I don't see that as a likely outcome, but the possibility exists because that player is guaranteed. As soon as they win that winter championship in February, they already know they're going to BlizzCon in November. So there's that. The other thing I didn't love about this, and I know it's a very minor thing, but there was that really good thread we talked about a few shows back, well before BlizzCon, about how they've done nothing for players who aren't in one of these specific regions. And the call out at the time was for people who are playing from Africa, which I know sounds like a crazy thing to be like up in arms about. But there, if you look at the like world map on this post, Africa's just grayed out like it doesn't exist. And all of those players, if they play the game and want to take a shot at playing, should be able to declare residency and compete in like Asia Pacific or something, right? Like there's no reason they shouldn't be disallowed altogether. That seems really odd. And I'm sure that there's got to be some legal barriers to that, and that's the only reason. But I am disappointed that didn't get solved for this year.
That's fair. For those asking in chat, the last position is the last call invitational tournament. Invitee, which basically they're kind of vague on it, but basically they choose the top eight people based on their merit throughout the year. We assume point totals or wins or something, but they're not really saying for sure. And they invite, or basically they go to an invitational for a tournament, and the winner of that one gets the fourth slot for each region. So
right, so it's
works.
The three seasonal victors plus that last call as a sort of
exactly.
a fourth season, basically.
Right, and those are eight players invited to compete for that last spot. And then last but not least, the World Championship. It will take place in the fall, featuring 16 of the world's best players. So the same as always, three players from each region will be invited directly to the World Championship. The next top eight players per region will. So I guess it does kind of say the next top eight players per region will participate in the region's last call invitational to earn the final spot and a chance at a piece of the how much prize pool? The $1 million. You have to do the Dr. Evil thing whenever you say that. The $1 million prize pool. So Holy cow, that is huge. Kevin, $1 million. What would you do with your share of $1 million?
I mean, it's hard to imagine, and I want to see the breakdown, but my guess is, right, like, last year's Hearthstone World Championship had a $250,000 prize pool. The winner, like, the global final winner got $100,000. This year, that person could be getting $500,000. They could be walking away, because that's about what it would work out to, right? Is like that 40 to 50% of the total prize pool. Like, this person could be walking away with $500,000 for being the best Hearthstone player. And lest we forget, likely that person has already won $100,000 for winning a Hearthstone season or whatever their portion of that was, plus their tournament earnings from the rest of the year and any streaming money, sponsorships. Like, someone's going to make $1 million playing Hearthstone in 2016. Someone is going to become a millionaire playing Hearthstone in 2016.
That's more than I make at my job.
I would hope. If you make $1 million, then you should be paying us to do this show with you, man. Holy shit.
Yeah, you should. So, all right. So, Kevin, are you declaring that we're going to see the first Hearthstone millionaire in 2016?
I mean, I would actually be surprised if you haven't already, in some respects, when you think about how much money people have made from salaries, sponsorships, streaming, prize winnings. Like, there's probably somebody out there who's made $1 million off of being a Hearthstone professional already. But I think someone is like going to make that jump who's maybe nobody now. It could even be that we see someone actually break $1 million in prize winnings in 2016. Yeah. Right. I like cumulative, not just in 2016, totally. The calendar year, but like, that's crazy. That's insane. It took most esports like a decade to build up to that. And this is Hearthstone's, what, third legitimate year of competitive play?
Yep.
Yeah.
So, yes.
Holy crap.
It's going to be a lot of fun watching and playing Hearthstone in 2016. There's one more cool thing I want to hit on. We're spending a lot of time on this, but it's so exciting. And this is so huge for Hearthstone. We had to spend some good time on it. But how events are eligible for awarding points now is changing, because in 2015 and before, there was a lot of people in the Hearthstone scene who were really unhappy with which tournaments were awarding points and which one weren't. Some were unfair, some weren't. And the rules this year are definitely much more black and white and much more fair, in my opinion. So the first thing is that no player may be provided an unfair buy in the event. We saw this one at Katowice. Thank you. And so basically what they did is they invited these players who basically didn't have to do any of like the seating stuff. They just kind of got their spot and got to skip like three rounds on invites and stuff like that. So no more. You can't have anyone get unfair buys just because they're a big name player, things like that. Second thing is that at least 32 participants must play a match in order for any of the event participants to be awarded points. So that probably won't be a problem, because you have to have a minimum of 128 people open registration players to sign up. So it kind of goes against it, but there's some ways to exploit that for sure. And match formats can include, but are not limited to, Last Hero Standing, Conquest, Four Hero One Band Conquest, and Blind Pick Best of Five. And tournament formats can include group play, single elimination, double elimination, Swiss, round robin, and any combination in the above formats. So, fair? Does that sound fair?
Well, what's interesting to me is I don't think they've actually ruled a lot of stuff out here. Like, blind pick best of five, for example, okay, means that each player has three decks. This is not Conquest. This is not Last Hero Standing. There's no recycling of decks. There's nothing to say, or I mean, and even if you used like Conquest or Last Hero Standing, there's nothing to say that this event couldn't also be run Challenge Stone style, right? Where you say, okay, it's a deck building competition and all of the other rules apply. We've got 128 open reg spots. We've got, you know, minimum matches played, yada, yada. But in addition to that, now there's this new deck building element introduced, and it's still now eligible to be a point awarding part of the Hearthstone World Championship circuit, which is cool. I think like, there's lots of stuff about this that is going to make maybe it a little bit harder for someone who's a casual observer to follow the game, because if you just jump in and you turn on a stream and there's an event on, you don't know what the format is, you don't know how many players there are, like there's a lot of variables. But it's also like that's kind of always been the case. It's just now all of those events technically can contribute towards our overall scene, right? Which is pretty awesome. So I'm pretty okay with that.
Sweet. All right, so that's our preview of 2016 Hearthstone World Championships. Hope you guys enjoyed it. Send us your emails on what you guys think, what your favorite parts are, what you think still needs some changing and tweaking, because it's definitely not perfect yet, but this is such a huge improvement over last year, an insane step in the right direction.
So, and we will hopefully get the details on China, and when we get those, we'll come back and we'll let you guys know what's different in the China region.
Absolutely. We got to jump in and talk with you guys a little bit about the meta.
Beat 'em or join 'em.
Yeah, so we're back. New week of the meta. We've got new reports out from both Tempo Storm and Liquid Hearth. We're going to try to blaze through this as quick as we can. The meta is not doing a ton right now, so we don't want to really like dissect a ton for you guys, but we do want to glance at what's going on in both of these reports and how we feel about that. So Tempo Storm, real quick, is rating 5 deck lists as tier 1 best in the game for ladder play, specifically ranked ladder play. And they've called out Midrange Paladin, Secret Paladin, Midrange Druid, Demon Zulok, and Freeze Mage. The lists that narrowly missed making that cut were Aggro Shaman, all of the other flavors of Warlock, and Aggro Druid. So before we get into Liquid Hearth, guys, JR, your thoughts on that list?
Well, I think it's interesting that Aggro Druid and Midrange Druid have basically flipped places. I don't know why. They didn't really explain why. I think it's because Aggro Druid right now doesn't do very well with like Reno Lock, basically, or the Reno decks they've kind of come up. Because if you look at this, you got Freeze Mage. Their Freeze Mage on here runs Reno, as most Freeze Mages now do. And then you've got Reno Lock. But I also thought it was interesting that we saw Malilock kind of come back up from the ashes, thanks to Bran Bronzebeard, because he's been pretty good as well, actually. As good as probably not as good as Reno, but better than I expected. But the other thing, big thing, is like Shaman.
Yeah, I was just gonna say Shaman outside of tier 4 was right. Something we hadn't really expected these guys to report. They're reporting this Aggro Shaman variant as almost tier 1, like the closest thing to best deck to play on the ladder that there is outside of these 5 core decks they've picked out. John, what do you think?
I think Midrange Druid makes perfect sense when you look at these other 4 decks at the top, as well as, and these Midrange Druids like are running typically like a copy of Sludge Belcher or a Ancient of War to kind of stave off some of that aggro stuff, but does well against Freeze Mage, does well against Handlock and things like that we're starting to see, and those Reno decks and stuff like that. And Midrange Druid has always been consistent, right? Like if there's a deck to say this is the most consistent deck in Hearthstone, I would honestly say it's Midrange Druid. Because again, it doesn't really have bad matchups. It never has great matchups, it never has like really any awful matchups. And when you've got a deck like that in a meta that is very much fluctuating and changing, and there's a lot of, I don't know really what to expect, you always see Midrange Druid come up.
It's very safe. Yeah.
Yep. Always come back up and be ranked very highly because it does so well, so consistently, especially with talented players who know how to wield the deck well.
Interesting, though, to see the top end be so mid-range heavy, right? Almost all of these are like mid-range Paladin, mid-range Druid, mid-range Demon Zoo, in a meta where there's so much aggro busting out, right? And I think we're about to enter the next phase of this meta that's going to be very aggro-driven, because those are the decks that take advantage of mid-range decks that need time to establish board presence and set up those combos.
I have one more interesting point I wanted to make. You do not see Hunter anywhere in tier 1 and tier 2.
Which I would disagree with.
Yeah, which is super uncommon, yeah. I mean, Hunter has been so good.
Mid-range Hunter, you mean?
Yeah, sorry, mid-range Hunter towards the top of Tier 2. I really would.
I mean, it's tough because Hunter doesn't have any really great matchups right now, right? Like, Hunter is a class that really preys on, like, mid-range Hunter comes back when Control Warrior's around. It comes back when Handlock's doing really well. And you've seen Handlock pushed out. You've seen Warrior pushed out. It's not a great, like, Hunter-friendly meta in a lot of ways. I mean, I've seen lots of Hunter on ladder, but they're not doing well, right? I think that's the real kicker.
It really depends on what you're seeing, too. Like, for me, I was seeing a lot of, like, Dragon Priest is what I was just seeing. I was seeing Secret Paladin. And there was one other deck that I was just seeing a lot that I was like, this sucks. And so I switched over to mid-range, and, like, I popped out of my slump in just a couple games. Once you get up into that, like, rank 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, I would definitely have that sit back a little bit farther in the rankings. But mid-range is still really solid, especially for a Hunter deck, especially if it continues to be kind of hit and miss with, like, these control decks, especially with people playing around with Reno and, you know, a lot of playing around with decks, even in Legend right now, because, well, it's the last season that really matters. So a lot of people are just experimenting, having fun in Legend, and you might be seeing some weird stuff where I think it would actually be better than normal.
Fair enough. All right, before we get too sidetracked, we also need to zip through the Liquid Hearth rankings. So top five on Liquid Hearth, for comparison's sake, are Midrange Druid in 5, Reno Warlock in 4, Control Warrior at 3, Midrange Paladin at 2, and Secret Paladin at 1. So interesting that there are actually 3 of the 5 decks are the same on these two reports, both Paladins and the Midrange Druid. The Freeze Mage on Liquid Hearth has been pushed to 8, which is kind of like top of Tier 2 by comparison. And Demon Zoo doesn't show up. I don't know where Demon Zoo has fallen off to on Liquid Hearth. Are they even rating Demon Zoo anymore?
They might call it Zoo. They just call it Zoo. Liquid Hearth does some weird stuff where they won't define decks as specific as Tempo Storm will.
Well, right. And then sometimes the other way around, where they, you know, they have Midrange Hunter, Hybrid Hunter, and Phase Hunter, where I don't think Tempo Storm differentiates between hybrid and midrange, if I'm accurate. I can't switch over, but...
Yeah, it's funny, because that was the other way around. For a long time, Liquid Hearth gave up distinguishing between the flavors of Hunter, because they said that basically all three of face, hybrid, and midrange were the same, minus about 5 different cards.
Well,
so,
this is the first week that they've split
them back
mid-range
out.
Midrange Druid and aggro Druid, because we had a big conversation about it last time we talked about Liquid Hearth, because we were looking for aggro Druid on the list, and it was just, you know,
non-existent
thrown in with midrange Druid all at once. So, yeah.
But so the only thing I really thought was interesting is how differently these two are rating Control Warrior. Like, the lists are pretty similar at the top. Everybody's saying, like, Reno Lock is good, Zoo is good, Malagos Warlock is back, that's all cool. But the weird distinction is Liquid Hearth is super up on Control Warrior, and it's barely the bottom of Tier 2 on Tempo Storm. And on the flip side, Tempo Storm is super, super hot on Aggro Shaman, and Aggro Shaman is still at the bottom, like the way bottom of Liquid Hearth, in 17th place out of the 21 decks that they're ranking.
I mean, I think
that's crazy.
And we talked about this a little bit before the show, but I think this makes a lot of sense just in the fact where Liquid Hearth equals tournaments.
Right.
Tempo Storm equals ladder. Aggro Shaman is great for ladder because it's quick and it has some really good matchups against very popular decks. At the same time, bring that to a tournament, and I mean, you're basically risking a coin flip in a lot of different ways, and so it's just not very strong in that way, and it can be punished very easily. It has some very few key horrible matchups that make it not a very great tournament deck. So I would say that's more than likely probably why we're seeing these different, because we've always seen these guys kind of have their opinions. Tempo Storm tends to be more opinionated towards ladder decks, and then Liquid Hearth tends to be more opinionated towards tournament decks.
Yeah, I feel like Liquid Hearth's more in between, though, because they still have Aggro Druid as number 6, and I wouldn't play that in a tournament if my life depended on it, though. So I feel like if it was strictly tournaments, it would be ranked a lot lower than that. But I don't know. Liquid Hearth, I've always said Liquid Hearth seems to be in a weird spot sometimes. So
also worth mentioning, right, that now we're going to have to put a little more nuance into this stuff, because Temple Storm treating theirs as a ladder report is very easy to analyze and make decisions about. There's not going to be one consistent tournament meta anymore. Like, the tournament meta report being very much, these are the decks that will work in a conquest format, was why Freeze Mage rocketed to the top. And now you may not be playing in a conquest format. I would never take Freeze Mage to a last hero standing tournament. That would be a huge liability. That would be super bad as a choice to make going into a tournament where you're in a lot of trouble. Even the four conquest one ban format is going to shift things up, because that's so different from what we're used to. So tournament meta at this point is going to be a much more difficult thing to predict as compared to, I mean, really, we're talking about what to play on the ladder for us and for people listening to the show, but it's going to be a very different world the next few reports we look at, I think.
So my question is, based on these reports, what are you guys going to run on the ladder this week?
I'll go first. I'm going to switch probably between three decks. So I really like Aggro Shaman, and if it's working, it's my deck that I want to play the most with, because I think it really exploits the strong decks right now. My backup, when Aggro Shaman isn't working, usually it means that it's safe to run into my mid-range Druid. Or sorry, mid-range Hunter. I keep doing that, man. Unbelievable. my mid-range Hunter deck, so I'm going to go ahead and run that. And then just for giggles, I am going to run, I've got a Rito Paladin deck that Freshka gave me, which is amazing. And once he's ready to post it, I'll tell you guys all about it. He's not ready to post it yet, still testing. But those are going to be my three decks for December.
Nice.
What about you, Kevin?
Well, I actually want to play the Aggro Shaman list, just because I've enjoyed playing Shaman on the ladder since Grand Tournament came out, and I've played a lot of Shaman trying to, like, get to know the class, and I played mid-range even when I was losing, because it was just fun, like the games that you won where you got to bust out a really big Thunderbluff Valiant or something, I enjoyed them, so I played a lot of it because of that, so I'll probably take a spin at my take on one of these Aggro Shaman lists, because looking them over, like, I'm looking at Luffy's, I'm looking at Reynard's, and I feel like I would do it a little differently, but I'll definitely probably run one of those. I might reprise mid-range Druid. I might mess around and tweak my list a little bit to reflect some of the new meta changes, because I really like some of the changes that have occurred as people try to optimize. Cutting an Aspirant, for example, I think is super smart and opens room to bring back, like, my list doesn't run a big game Hunter, and that's punished me so many times. So putting a single big game Hunter back in is going to be pretty awesome. And then for a third deck, I'm really kind of torn. Like, I don't have Malagos, but I have more than enough dust to craft him, so I might actually try Malilock for the first time just to see, because I feel like that could be a lot of fun. And it looks like it'd be neat to play. Otherwise, I'm actually thinking very seriously about going back and doing a modified Patron Warrior, because I feel like that would be super good in this meta.
Yeah, I'm looking at probably Malilock as well, and maybe Renolock. But I do want to do Aggro Shaman as well, because I am like 100 wins away from Gold Shaman right now, because I played it a lot early on. So I got up there and then kind of ventured off. I'm also like 100 wins away from Druid, so I'll probably play mid-range Druid as well.
Nice.
Nice. All right, guys, we got to keep moving on here. So we are 2 weeks through the League of Explorers, and coming up on week three, we had a week off, so no new wing, but we got a new wing coming up next week. So let's look back on these first 2 weeks with a little League of Explorers mid-review.
Wow, I can't believe that worked.
So, yeah, the League of Explorers in review, something I was curious about and thinking about a couple weeks ago is how the Grand Tournament didn't seem to have a lot of cards that we really played with in the meta. Didn't really have cards that really shifted the meta as much. Black Rock Mountain kind of felt the same way, although it brought Grim Patron. The Grand Tournament brought Secret Paladin. But I feel like League of Explorers has kind of shifted the meta almost every week, because the first week you had Reno and all these Reno decks start popping up. Second week we had Bran Bronzebeard, and you know, Malilock is now a tier 2 deck thanks to Bran Bronzebeard. And one of my questions to you guys is, with these little releases, so League of Explorer had what, 45 cards released? Grand Tournament had 100 and some, like all at the same time.
Yeah.
So my question is this: do you guys think that formats like this little week at a time, you know, 10 cards to be able to play with an Explorer per week, works better than a huge release of everything that maybe we don't get to explore as much? Or do you feel like possibly it's more, we have more quality in League of Explorers than what we have seen, that we haven't seen since Goblins versus Gnomes and Gnacks?
I mean, I think I would start by saying this. I think Blizzard has set a pretty safe precedence that, excluding BlackRock for part of it, saying that Adventures, while you get less, you know exactly what you're paying for, and there are some very good cards. I mean, Zombie Chow, Sludge Belcher, Shade of Naxxramas, some really great cards in the past. And then, of course, Emperor Thorson and Blackrock Mountain. That card alone is worth $20, you know? And then, of course, we're seeing awesome stuff with Reno and all these other little decks. Unearthed Raptor is one of my favorite cards so far. The new Overload Trog, I forget the name of it, but the new one that came out just this, I can't even remember, was that week one or week two? I think it was week one. No, week two, because it was the Uldumon Trogs. Things like that are really cool, really exciting cards that are opening up these kind of new possibilities. I don't think Blizzard has done an expansion or an adventure as well as they've done League of Explorers. And I think in the future, when they're, you know, designing this stuff, I think they're going to look back at League of Explorers as, this is what we want to emulate every time we come out with an adventure, because so far it's been incredible.
Maybe.
What do you think, Kevin?
Maybe. My thing is like, I've gone back and I knew we were going to have this conversation, so I went through the card lists from each set, and I don't think League of Explorers is an outlier in any way. I think if you go through the whole League of Explorers card list, what you're going to see is, you're going to see about a third of these cards are very playable. They're strong, they're designed well, they fit into obvious archetypes, they're good on curve. Like, you know right away which cards are strong. There's about a third of the cards that are like quasi playable or might come up in very specific meta situations. They're the Kezan Mystics of this set, right? Where they have one application, and if they work, they're phenomenal, but otherwise they're kind of meh. And then you have a third of the cards that are basically unplayable junk. And that honestly, that ratio has been basically consistent in every set. Like, if you really stop and go through Naxxramas, GVG, they were all the same way. There was about a third of these cards that were super powerful, mandatory, immediately saw play, shifted the meta. A third of them that were like questionable quasi-tech cards that might have an impact if you use them right. And then about a third of them where you're like, no one's ever going to play that card. That's terrible. And I think that's been the same. I think the reason we're feeling it so explicitly right now is these are big meta shifts all at once, right? Like, Reno all by himself said, no, aggro is going away for a while. Forced a bunch of mid-range decks because you're trying to overcome the control decks that have Reno, which opens the door for those aggro decks to come back and exploit the mid-range decks you're seeing on ladder, right? Like, that was really cool and cycled the meta really fast. That was not what happened when Thoris Honor Patron came out, even though they were super good cards. So, I mean, we didn't see this kind of shift when Lotheb or Sludge Belcher came out. It's just that it's something that's so applicable and makes such a big difference. I think Reno is going to stick around, but I don't think we're going to look back on Reno really any differently than we look back on any other card from any other set, other than just how immediate that impact was felt. Because there really hasn't been anything like that in a previous set that I can think of. Like, nothing quite as immediate where it came out and 2 days later the meta was different. I don't think there's any other card that's been quite that significant.
I'm going to disagree with where you're going with that, because personally, I think in the past we've seen strong cards come There, I would say the only truly meta shifting card that we've seen in an adventure so far is Thorasan, because it reopened a bunch of combos and things like that. But already we've seen two cards that have had a pretty heavy impact on the meta and things like that. And I would even look at TGT and there's no way one third of TGT is super strong immediately playable cards. There's no way there's 40, 45 cards there that people are actively putting in the top 20, 25 decks as like, yeah, these are the good ones. There's maybe 10 to 15. And so I guess I would say, like, I get what you're saying. And I think there's a part of that that I would strongly agree with. But I think this one feels different because it genuinely is a different approach where Blizzard says, let's stop making good cards or great cards or greatly playable cards, and let's start making impactful cards that change the way players are looking at the game and how they're building their decks. And I think they've done that. Look at Reno Warlock. Look at some of these brand decks. Look at the Unearthed Raptor Death Rattle Rogue that we played last week. I mean, without those cards, like, these decks wouldn't have been there. And sure, Unearthed Raptor Rogue isn't even on the top metas, but it was impactful immediately because it was really strong. It was really fun. And so I think they are really taking a very different approach to this one than they have in the past and start saying impact is what these new cards should be about. How do they impact things?
To a point, I agree, but like TGT had Justicar Trueheart and Mysterious Challenger and a bunch of cards that had impact the same way. They shifted the meta overnight, right? Like, this is not inconsistent. I love League of Explorers, and I think thematically, we've already discussed how it's probably the best example of them stepping up their game and doing something that's like unique and creative, but I don't think it's a huge outlier. Like, I think they've actually done a pretty good job all the way along. It's just we're excited by the fresh stuff.
It's not an OP expansion. That's basically my spin. I'm definitely not saying it's an OP adventure, but I think it's silly to think that it's not the most impactful adventure / expansion that we've seen so far. We're only going to know in a couple months from now how truly impactful it'll be. But
I still think Naxxramas was probably the most influential. Like, it just had so many cards in it that were playable day one. I mean, Zulok and Face Hunter were really the big winners out of that set, or actually the Undertaker. Remember
right,
those days?
Yeah,
yeah. They had to nerf that card because it was so good.
Right. The difference being that Naxxramas didn't introduce any new mechanics or tribes. Right. That was really where people were like, they're super excited about dragons in Blackrock Mountain. They're super excited about Discover, which is crazy awesome in League of Explorers. And chat's loving how Discover has worked out, which is cool. But yeah, no, I mean, Naxxramas was just, we're going to stick to Death Rattle. We're going to stick to existing minion types. It was before mech was ever a thing. They just kept a very narrow kind of, we need good playable cards that fit the existing game. Now they're taking bigger steps, and that's where League feels really good, is that this was a new mechanic that our expectations around new mechanics have been kind of mediocre since Inspire was such a flop and Joust is kind of non-existent. So this, like, Discover is huge by comparison.
And just one more thing to just finish off this piece of the discussion before we move on to a couple quick things is the one thing I was thinking of is going into developer interviews before the grand tournament and asking them like what cards they're excited about. And they were kind of saying like Inspire and things like that, the new mechanic. You know, those didn't really pan out well. But like BlizzCon, when I was asking them about their favorite cards, like the number one card they said was Reno Jackson. And they said specifically because it's going to change the meta. So they knew very well ahead of time, I feel like in this expansion, what cards were going to really impact the meta, and the players kind of were able to also be on the same page as the developers. And I think that's been a big difference because I felt like they thought that Inspire was really going to change things when it really didn't. So yeah. I think that's been the big difference between the two.
Sure.
So going on with this, I'll start with John, and I'm going to combine these two. What do you think are the expansion's weakest points? And what do you think are the expansion's strongest points?
I would say the weakest points, and that's a tough question. I would say the weakest points are there are some cards. And again, this happens with every expansion, so it's kind of hard to discount it as a weak point. But there are some just really silly, not good, unplayable cards that we've kind of seen in this expansion. I think it's kind of to offset some of these other super impactful cards that we're seeing. But there are just are some cards that I don't think should have been made, I guess. But yeah, strong points though. I mean, the adventure stuff was amazing. So just the solo stuff was incredible. My favorite so far. I'm excited for Wing 3 or 4. But Wing 1 or 2 is by far the most fun I've had playing single player content. I think the discover mechanic is huge. I was really worried about it at first because I was worried it was either going to be too random to be not playable or too strong to just be like kind of immediately impactful. But I think they did really good jobs. Like Dark Peddler is one of my new favorite cards. I think that's a greatly designed card. And yeah, so those are my weak and strongs.
Yeah, well, with Discover, just the fact that they decided to make the weight more towards class cards over neutral cards, I think was huge.
Yep. Kev.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head with the expansion being a lot of fun, the adventure being just really good to play. And I loved the Temple Escape concept. I really enjoyed how that played out. I thought it was a lot of fun and a nice take on something fresh and different, because I have always been a big advocate that Hearthstone could use a puzzle mode. And that, to me, was a good sort of way for them to show off new things they could do to give you some new ways to think about the game. And I would love to see that go further. Like, I'd love to see the ability to load up the adventure mode when I don't feel like playing ladder and have them throw me the random puzzle of the day to solve or something. Like, I think there's more opportunity there to really grow that, and League feels to me like they're starting to test those waters a little bit. So I love that. And there are some really cool new additions. I really do like that they gave us Bran Bronzebeard as the answer to Baron Rivendare, that we got Reno Jackson. Just lots of very cool stuff that way. I would say the weak points for me are it is the smallest adventure. It feels kind of thin in terms of total size by being only the four wings and nothing massive.
Even though there's
there.
Been more cards than past ones.
Yeah, absolutely. I would have liked for the adventure itself to have more content, because I don't mind paying the money for the cards, but the expansion is like I'm paying for the adventure mode and I can go collect cards anytime. When I drop 20 or 30 bucks on the adventure, I'd like the adventure to have a little more oomph to it. And I don't think the class challenge concept is really enough to make up for not having some more other content in the adventures. Personal opinion. But I enjoyed the hell out of it. The other weak thing for me is I feel like they're really stretching for ways to make new minions and new cards that are like have big drawbacks to offset big power. And we've seen them do that pretty well with like the, you know, Clockwork Giant and Fel Reaver and all these different things that have all these like conditions, but now they're really going even further with stuff like Ancient Shade, Eerie Statue. These are cards where like I look at them and I'm like, okay, that's cool, but like it's actually not interesting to me because the drawback on these cards is enough to make them not worth playing, so you just don't see them. And I like the idea that Blizzard would just give us some more kind of like good, solid, reliable, consistent cards that you would want to see played, because that goes back to what I was saying earlier about how I wish that more than a third of the cards in any set would see regular play. And I know that's tough to do. It's tough to make enough cards that are that attractive. But on the whole, I mean, there's some pretty good stuff in this set. I'm pretty excited to see what the meta looks like when the new stuff does land, because I mean, there are cards that we haven't even talked about that have had big impacts, like Ginny of Zephyrs. Crazy good card. I love what that does. And there's more yet to come, right? I'm curious to see what people can do with stuff like animated armor or some of the other like awesome cards that we have yet to see. So I'm excited. I'm excited to see what the next couple of weeks bring.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you guys pretty much summed that up. So I think we had some emails, John.
Yes.
We've got mail.
We did. We love your emails. Thank you so much. We got actually a bunch of emails this week. We actually don't have time for them this week. So a couple of things. If you are sending emails into the show, we have one to ask. We haven't had to ask this yet, but we do. We're going to push the one email that we're taking to next week. But if you could limit it to kind of a short paragraph or something like that, that would be super helpful. Because we got a lot of great questions this last week, but we couldn't talk about them on the show because it was such a long, in-depth explanation. And trimming that stuff out would have just taken too much away from the email to make it yours anymore. So if you can try to limit it just a little bit, that would be amazing. And we're going to get to your emails next week. And yeah, that's all I had for emails. Whew, guys, it's time to go. It's been a long freaking show. We talked about Hearthstone World Championships. We did a mid-review on TGT. We've got our first major tournament in Hearthstone in the books for 2016. So it's been a full freaking show. And let's go ahead and wrap it up. Patrons, Kevin, tell us a little bit about what's going on there.
Yeah, so we got no new patrons to recognize this week, but as always, we are still very excited about the upcoming opportunities. If we can continue to grow the show, we've got more cool stuff that we'd like to bring to you guys as fans of the show, and stuff that we'd like to really be able to do ourselves, whether that's the new updated voice acting work or a bonus episode. I'll even tease that down the road, we're talking about maybe having some well-met hosted or sponsored tournaments. There's lots of cool stuff that we'd love to do for you guys. Unfortunately, as we've already alluded to, JR is not, in fact, a millionaire, and he can't underwrite it, so we need your help. If you love the show, you love what we're doing, as always, the core content of the show is never going to be behind any kind of paywall. All of the episodes and all the cool stuff we're doing for you guys is going to be 100% free. But if you want to support us and let us do more for you and the other fans of the show in Hearthstone, you can hit patreon.com/wellmetpodcast. Help us get to our next $350 milestone, where we're going to do updated host introductions, intros and outros to the show for you guys.
Yes, absolutely. So thank you guys so much for that. And let's go into iTunes reviews, JR.
Yeah, so we had a couple new iTunes reviews this week from the USA, Bardic DM and R10101, which is an awesome name and I think very binary. anyway, that was my joke for the week, guys. Woo, but no, if you want to leave an iTunes reviews, just go on to iTunes, click the little, find our, you know, type in Hearthstone, find Well Met Podcast, click the little 5-star button. Leave a little review. We'll give you a shout out on the show, and we'll really appreciate it because that does a lot for us to get seen by more people.
Absolutely. Guys, thank you guys so much for those reviews. They mean so much. Shout outs for the week. Who are you shouting out this week, Kev?
Nothing big, honestly. Coming up on December, so that means it's time for me to get back to work on some new content. It's time to start planning for some holidays. Looking forward to seeing a lot of people over the next month as people have time off work and they can come, you know, back home, visit family, whatever. So if you or somebody you know is going to be passing through the Saskatoon area, want to come say hi, I'm looking forward to seeing lots of people. And it would be super cool to touch base with anybody who's a fan of the show. Outside of that, it's going to be a nice quiet one for me for a change.
Nice. What about you, JR?
Yeah, I'd like to give a shout out to everybody that came by this last week when I was doing my gaming marathon, came hang out, donated money, emailed me, said good things, played games with me and stuff like that. That was awesome. You guys helped us raise $600. And remember, if you want to donate, it goes to the Children's Miracle Network, is a really great cause. Extralife.blizzpro.com. Just click the little support me button and help us get to $1,000 or $2,000. But thanks again for everybody that came out and watched that and hung out with me. It was awesome. And I hope to do it again soon.
Awesome. JR,
what about you, John?
There's one word I can use to mark your stint with the Extra Life stuff, and it is absolutely
remarkable.
So, nice work. You're doing a great job. As for me, I find out tomorrow if I don't have to take any finals. It can be done with the semester, so wish me luck on that. But other than that, absolutely nothing. So, thank you guys so much again for checking out Well Met. This has been episode number 37. Thank you to Jake Butno over at jakebutno.ca for the awesome music. Dread Scythe of Scythe Designs for the awesome logos work and vector work, stuff like that. Email us, wellmet@blizzpro.com. Check out our subreddit at r/wellmetpodcast. Patreon.com/WellMedPodcast, at WellMedPodcast on Twitter and on iTunes, Stitcher, and all your major podcast outlets. We're out of here.
You can find John on Twitter at KickedTripod and on Twitch at twitch.tv/KickedTripod. You can find JR on Twitter at Eldorian and on Twitch at twitch.tv/BlizzPro. And you can find Kevin on Twitter at Lack of Realism and on Twitch at twitch.tv/OdinTV.
Remarkable. I can't do it.
BlizzPro.com. Beyond Noob.